Well, it was the evening of my 21st birthday, and I was in a terrible mood. I wanted to spend my birthday with my friends doing the things 21-year-olds do, go to all-you-can-eat sushi and stay out till 1 in the morning, living the good life. But my mom, someone who I love dearly, had guilted me in joining her, my dad, and my siblings for a family birthday dinner at a nearby restaurant. Now, going to dinner with my family was the last thing I wanted to do on my birthday. But my mom has this amazing gift of making people do what they don't want to do and guilting them when they avoid family functions. And me being a peacekeeper and wanting to avoid conflict, I begrudgingly said yes. And so our plan for my birthday was to go to dinner. To make my mood a little bit more off, my mom had invited my uncle. Now, again, I love my uncle, but my uncle is one of those people who, if you're just a few minutes late for dinner, he'll spend the rest of the evening talking about how you were late for dinner. So you can imagine my frustration as we leave the house at 7 p.m., already late for our 7 p.m. reservation. I'm in the car, and I'm not feeling particularly in the mood to celebrate. I'm feeling a bit grumpy, a bit of a Scrooge. I'm being quiet, and we get to the restaurant, and I follow the hostess as she leads us to our table. And she's kind of navigating her way, and as she turns a corner, I turn with her, and I'm met by this loud, "Surprise!" And I look up, and I see all of my friends, all of my family there at the restaurant. They had organized this beautiful birthday surprise party for my 21st. It was truly a surprise. It caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it at all. And to this day, it's one of the many highlights one of the highlights in my life. Having all the people I love and care about in that one room was a pretty special day. But as I think back to my 21st birthday, I can't help but notice the shift in my mood from one event. I entered that restaurant feeling moody, grumpy, and frustrated, and one event changed everything. One event shifted my mood to joyous and left me feeling incredibly loved. One event changed everything. This morning, we're going to hear about the first person to witness the Easter story, and for her, how it was this beautiful surprise that changed her in a pretty dramatic way. And how the Easter story for us here today is good news. And it actually can be a beautiful surprise for us here in 2019. So if you have a Bible with you, let me invite you to turn to the book of John, chapter 20. It'll also come up on the screen behind me as well. Now, before we read this text, let me give you a bit of background as to what's happened thus far in the story. It's early Sunday morning. And just a few days before, on Friday, Jesus Christ was nailed to a cross and crucified and killed. His lifeless body was taken off the cross and placed into an open tomb where it was then sealed with a large stone. With Jesus' death came what felt like the end of a movement. His followers scattered, all not really knowing what to do with themselves now that he was gone. And early Sunday morning, Mary, a good friend of Jesus, not to be confused with Mary, the mother of Jesus, comes to visit the grave of her friend Jesus. She comes to mourn early Sunday morning under the cover of darkness. And as she arrives there at the tomb, she notices something unusual. The large boulder that would have sealed the tomb shut has now been rolled away. And Mary's about to encounter the most beautiful surprise, a surprise that'll change her life forever. And we pick up the story in verse 11 of John 20. It reads, "Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. And as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying?' 'They have taken my Lord away,' she said, 'and I don't know where they have put him.' At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for?' Thinking that he was the gardener, she said, 'Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him.' Jesus said to her, 'Mary.' She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, 'Rabboni,' which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Would you pray with me? Jesus, this story is good news for us here today. And we have reason to celebrate this morning. And I pray that by your Spirit, you would come and open our hearts and our minds to hear from you, that the Easter story would be one that touches us here in these next few moments. In your name we pray. Amen. This morning, we're going to look at two questions. First, what did Easter do for Mary? And secondly, what does Easter offer us here today? What can Easter offer us here this morning? Let's start with what did Easter do for Mary? I mentioned that Easter is a day of celebration, that we have good reason to celebrate. But Easter, the Easter story doesn't start out that way. Easter starts out with a grieving woman named Mary. And the reason for Mary's grief is that her good friend, Jesus, was not only a friend and someone she was close with, but he was someone who radically changed her life. Before meeting Jesus, Mary is described as being demon-possessed, which in the context of this time period likely meant she had an illness of some kind. And she was deemed as different and dangerous by the community. And because of her illness, she would have been ostracized and kept apart and isolated from everyone else. But all of that changed when Mary met Jesus. Jesus miraculously healed her. And in healing her, he offered her a whole new life. She was now able to have real relationships. She was now able to be a part of this community that she was once distant from. Her entire life was changed through Jesus' work. But now, early Sunday morning, she comes to the tomb with a different heart. Her heart has been broken and wounded with the loss of her good friend and teacher, Jesus. And verse 1 of this passage that we read says that Mary comes on the first day of the week, on Sunday, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb while it was still dark. That she comes under the cover of darkness. And darkness not only describes the physical surroundings of that early morning, that it was dark in the morning, but it describes the mood after Friday. It describes the mood after Jesus was killed. There was this feeling of sadness and hurt and disappointment in the air. Jesus' followers saw him as a political revolutionist, someone who was going to lead them to victory. And with his death, all of that seemed to come to an end. And darkness clouded Mary's story. What was her future going to look like now that Jesus was gone? Her own life seemed unclear and uncertain, and she finds herself at this tomb weeping. Darkness is the start of the Easter story. My guess is that some of us here might be able to sympathize with what Mary is going through here. Darkness is something that is a pretty common experience. And if you've ever lost a job, lost a loved one, a relationship, or maybe even your health, it can be this feeling of walking in darkness. Darkness can be the feeling of unknown. It's living with fear because you're unsure what tomorrow will look like. It's feeling helpless because the situation in front of you just seems completely out of your control and you feel unable to do anything about it. And just like the death of Jesus, darkness can feel like a dead end. It can feel like the end of the story. Darkness is dealing with pain. And Mary comes to the tomb early Sunday morning, her heart filled with pain. But as I mentioned earlier, although Mary enters this story and comes to the tomb grieving and tears and pain, she's about to experience a surprising twist that will change her forever. The text says that Mary is there at the tomb and she's weeping. And as she weeps, she notices something strange. The tomb, the large stone guarding the tomb, has been rolled away. And as she looks into the tomb, she notices that the body of Jesus is missing. Now, for anyone grieving, the place that she has come to mourn, this would have broke her heart even more. And she starts assuming, you know, maybe someone's stolen Jesus' body, or maybe his body's been relocated. And she begins to weep more and more and more. And she hears someone come and ask her, "Why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" And she's so caught up in her grief that she thinks it's the gardener. And she says, "You know, if wherever you've placed him, if you've moved him around, tell me where he is. I need to find him. I need to be with him." Her heart is aching. And it's only when she hears the gentle whisper of her name, Mary, that something changes. This is a familiar voice. She's heard this voice before. It's a voice that has called her before and has changed her story once before. And she turns, and to her amazement, standing before her is the risen Jesus. His body has not been stolen. His body has not been moved. He's not dead, but he is alive. And she does what her heart has been wanting to do all along. She clings to him, she grabs him, and she embraces him. The one she's been mourning over has now appeared in front of her. He is alive. Now, if this is your first time hearing the Easter story, that might sound a bit strange to you. Someone coming back to life, I mean, that seems a bit odd. And being someone who didn't grow up going to church, this was a strange story when I first heard it. Life coming from death? It seems impossible. But the idea, the life coming from death, is something we see a lot, actually, especially at this time of year. My kids, who are ages 3.5 and 2, are really interested in gardening and how things grow. And they've started to plant a few seeds in the garden in our home as a way to celebrate spring and to participate in the beauty of our yard. And to help them understand what's happening beneath the soil, my wife took a seed, wrapped it in a moist paper towel, and put it in a glass vase, and it's put it into sunlight. And I think we have a picture of what it looks like here. Boom, there it is. And you can see the seed has begun to sprout. And the kids have been amazed to see how this plant, this sprout is coming from this single seed. And seeds are amazing, but they actually don't exist for themselves. They're designed to die. They're designed to protect an enzyme inside, and when the conditions are right, they break apart and they give way to the life of the sprout. A seed is designed to die to give way to the life of a plant. And when we look at the beauty of creation, when we see the cherry blossoms and the greenery in our city, they all attest to this idea that life comes from death. Life comes from death. Jesus does the impossible at that. Jesus does the impossible at that first Easter. He conquers death. Death, the thing that seems so final and concrete. Death, the thing that seems like a dead end and the end of the story, he overcomes it with his resurrection. And his resurrection shows that Jesus was not just a man who lived 2,000 years ago. He wasn't a political revolutionary. He wasn't a guy with some good ideas, but he truly was God in flesh. This is a story that radically changes our world. And the Easter story is a display of God's plan to rescue us all. It's his great love mission for you and me. His death pays for our sin and our shortcoming, and his resurrection offers us new life. He offers us his very life in the Easter story so that we might be able to live and live to the fullest. And Mary's encounter with the risen Jesus changes her. It's here that she experiences this surprising twist that she never could have imagined. Her heart moves from sorrow to joy. Joy that her friend has now returned. But more than that, that she has a friendship with the living God. Mary's life radically changed that first Easter morning. It begs the question then of, if Easter is this powerful story that happened and impacted Mary's life in such a powerful way, what are the implications for us? What does Easter have to offer you and me this morning in 2019 here in Vancouver? I'd like to suggest two things. Well, one thing. I'd suggest that it offers hope. And it offers two types of hope. Hope for today and hope for the future. Let's start with that first idea of hope for today. We can live with hope for today. When I was 13, my cousins and I would often go swimming at a pool in Richmond. And one time when we were swimming, we were hanging out in a part of the pool that wasn't the deep end, but it was deep enough that our feet couldn't touch the bottom. And we were there with my cousin Charlene, and Charlene would always sit in an inner tube because she didn't know how to swim. And we got so used to Charlene being there that I think most of us forgot that she didn't know how to swim. On this particular day, she somehow slipped off of the tube she was sitting on and fell into the water. When she hit the water, she immediately started to panic. She started to flail her arms, and she was struggling to keep her head above water, but she was slowly starting to sink. I was the closest person to her, and I remember immediately swimming to her as fast as I could. And for whatever reason, when I got to her, I did something strange and unexpected. In the panic of the moment, I swam below her, and I put her feet on my shoulder so that her head could come above the water. In the chaos and the panic of the moment, all I knew was Charlene needed to breathe, and I needed to offer her something to stand on. After a few minutes, other people who were nearby came and grabbed her, and she was fine, and we never went swimming with Charlene again. But when someone is drowning, the immediate response is to pull them out of the water. But here's the beautiful part of Easter, is that when we're drowning in the dark parts of life, Christ does the unthinkable. He enters into that darkness. He enters into the deepest pains of our life, even death itself, and he offers us something secure to stand on, his very life. He offers his life so that we might keep our head above the water. Eventually, I would have had to come up for air and Charlene would have been back in the water. And we can go through life looking for something to stand on, looking for something to give us hope for the day. And what we'll find as we journey through our lives is that nothing will endure, nothing lasts, nothing comes close to the life of Christ. The resurrection offers us hope for today. It gives us something to stand on. As pastor and author Tim Keller puts it, Christ's resurrection not only gives you hope for the future, it gives you hope to handle your scars right now. It's real hope for all of us here today. And the resurrection also gives us hope for the future, not only for today, but also for the future. A number of months ago, my wife's aunt, Diana, passed away. And she passed away rather quickly. And while most of her family and friends were expecting it, it still didn't alleviate the pain and the heartache that all of us felt when it happened. She was a lovely person with a really big personality and an even bigger heart. She truly was a gift. And there was so much sadness in her passing, and people were understandably upset. And we had the privilege of attending her funeral shortly after, and it was one of the most unique experiences and unique funerals I think I've ever been to. Diana had requested that everyone throw her a party, and it definitely felt that way. When we arrived at the church, the foyer was filled with all sorts of photos and memories of Diana, and there was a long table that seemed to go on forever that was filled with all of her favorite desserts and candy and treats and things that she loved baking for people. And people were asked to wear bright colors as a way to celebrate her life. And she requested upbeat, joyous music that kind of went with that party theme. And while there were still tons of tears and everyone was weeping and mourning her loss, there was something different in the air. Diana was a follower of Christ. And as most of her family and friends were as well, there was a different optimism. There was a hope in the air. We knew that Diana's life carried on. We knew that she was in the very presence of God. And we knew that we would all one day see her again. And as people spoke about her, they spoke about her in a way that showed that her life didn't come to an end, but it was actually continuing. And everyone still this day still deeply misses her, but there was this real sense and hope in which we all carry with us. This hope that her story continues. And we will one day see her again. The resurrection offers us real hope. It's not superficial hope that says, hey, I hope things turn around for you, or I hope you feel better. But it's a real hope where the God of the universe comes into the messiness of our lives and says, I'm going to put it all on the line for you. I'm going to offer my very life so that you too might know that you don't journey through this life alone. That I am with you, that my very spirit resides in you and will empower you and will give you hope in those moments when you need it the most. We can have real hope for today. And the promise for those of us who choose to follow Christ, as Revelation 21 describes, is that he will wipe away every tear from our eyes. And death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And this text speaks to the life to come, that if we believe in Jesus Christ, our lives will not end with our death, but we will live forever with God in eternity. But it also gives us hope for the here and now, knowing that if our lives are united with his, he will strengthen us and empower us by his spirit. The resurrected Christ resides in his followers. And this is why as Christians, we gather each and every Sunday. We gather every Sunday to remember that first Easter, to remember the story that we're a part of, that we worship a God who is not distant and aloof from suffering and pain, but he actually enters into it. He comes into the darkness of our world, and he offers his life as a sacrifice for our sin, and his resurrection offers us something new at Easter, to remind us that our lives don't have to live in isolation, and we can live with hope. I don't know what your story is this morning and what darkness kind of clouds your world today, but the good news of the Easter story is that Christ has made all things new, that his resurrection has flipped the world upside down, that death and pain and hurt don't get the final say. The darkness of our world doesn't get the final say. Christ does. He has resurrected. As Jesus approaches Mary, he asks her two questions that help her and us see him a little bit more clearer. And I'll close with this. Those two questions are, why are you weeping and who are you seeking? Why are you weeping and who are you seeking? Now, those seem like strange questions to ask someone who's grieving, but they're actually really important. That first question, why are you weeping? It's Jesus' desire that we name the places that make us weep, that we name and acknowledge before God in an honest manner, Jesus, here are the places in my life that make me weep the most. Here are the parts in me that are damaged. Here are the parts in me that are broken. Jesus, here are the things that keep me up at night. And there's this honesty before God of saying, Jesus, this is where I weep. And his second question is, who are you seeking? And a better way for us to hear that question is, what will you turn to alleviate your pain? What will you turn to mend your broken heart? What will you look to try and alleviate your suffering? We can look for hope and for life in many different things, whether that be relationships, money, our careers, the list goes on and on. But what we'll find time and time again is nothing can transform our lives better and more powerfully than the resurrected Christ. This morning, we've all come to the cross and have offered a prayer and said, Jesus, these are the places that hurt me the most. These are the places in my heart that are wounded. And these are the places that I need you to enter into and to transform and to resurrect. The good news of the Easter story is that Jesus is making all things new. And could it be this Easter that he desires to enter your story and to beautifully surprise you with newness this Easter? To transform your darkest places and to offer light, to take your brokenness and to offer you hope. Would you pray with me? Jesus, we come before you as people who are walking through all sorts of different things. Some of us, Jesus, are living with fear and not sure what tomorrow will look like. Jesus, some of us are living with uncertainty and walking under this cloud of darkness. And Jesus, some of us here are just weeping. We just feel lost and broken. God, we thank you for your Son, Christ, not only for his death, but his resurrection that offers us a different story. It's a story where we're reminded that we don't journey through our lives alone, Spirit, that you enter in. And would you come now by your resurrected Spirit and touch those places in our lives where we need to feel hope, where we need to feel healing, where we need to feel your real life presence. Jesus, we have reason to celebrate this morning because you reign supreme. You conquered it all, and we celebrate you this morning. Come now by your Spirit, we pray. Amen.